While waiting for the others to catch up, I stood in the portal and looked at the theatrical machinery behind the blue scrim of the fake sky, the bundles of glass fibers that piped in the light. The sun was bright but cold. All the infrared had been filtered out of it. Warmth came instead from the sky itself, which radiated gentle heat like an extremely low-temperature broiler. We felt it strongly here and were glad of the wind. Then another chair ride down to Orb 11's houseboat mat, a walk across, and a similar ride up to the next portal and into Orb 12, the highest numbered, farthest aft of the four Lateran orbs. Hence, there was no next portal. We had reached the caboose. But the sky supported a tubular catwalk cum ladder that took us up and around to a portal in the highest part of the sky, the zenith. Gravity here was noticeably weaker because we were closer to the core. We tarried on the ring-shaped catwalk below the portal, which, down to the last rivet, was just like the one in Orb 1 where Fra Jad had taken a shotgun blast. I looked around and saw details I clearly remembered, and I perched my butt on the railing to check it against my memory of being knocked over it. Jules had to identify himself at a Spiele terminal and state his business to someone in a language that I assumed was Ernewden. The leader of the soldiers chimed in with bursts of gruff talk. We five had to take turns standing in front of the machine and have our faces scanned. While we waited, we examined the ball valve, which felt, and therefore looked, as if it were in the ceiling, straight above our heads. It was old hat to me. In its design, I recognized the massive, thunderous praxic style, call it heavy intercosmic or Newton space bunker, that dominated the look of the ship as seen from the outside and the core, but was mercifully absent from the orbs. That great steel eye would not open for us today. Instead, we would use a round hatch just wide enough to admit Archibald, or a Troan grunt in his cumbrous gear web. This eventually swung open by remote command, and we queued up to climb through it. "A threat," Jesri snorted, and nodded at the colossal ball valve. I knew his tone, disgusted that he'd been so long figuring it out. I must have looked baffled. "Come on," he said. "Why would a praxic design it that way? Why use a ball valve instead of some other kind? A ball valve works even when there is a large pressure difference between its two sides," I said. "So the command could evacuate the core, open it to space, and then open this valve and kill the whole orb. Is that what you're thinking?" Jesri nodded.
"Fra Jesri, your explanation is unreasonably cynical," said Archibald, who had been listening.
"Oh, I'm sure there are other reasons for it," Jesri said. "But it is a threat all the same." One by one, we ascended a ladder through the small side hatch, up a short vertical tube, and through a second hatch, an airlock, and collected on another ring catwalk on the bore of the vertical shaft that rose 1,200 feet above us to the core. I checked out the keypad. Just where I remembered it. Leo had passed through first and was donning a sort of padded blindfold. Jules handed them to the rest of us as we emerged from the airlock. "Why?" I asked sharply.
"So you don't get sick from the effects of Coriolis," he said. "But in case you do," and he handed me a bag. "Come to think of it, take two, the way you are eating."
I took a last look up before putting on the blindfold. We were getting ready to ascend a dauntingly tall ladder, but I knew that gravity would get weaker the higher we went, so it wouldn't be that arduous. We would, however, be experiencing powerful, disorienting inertial effects as we moved closer to the axis. Hence, the concern about motion sickness. I groped for the lowest rung.
"Slow," Jules said. "Settle on each step, and wait for it to feel correct before moving to the next."
Since the whole ladder was enclosed in a tubular cage, there was scant danger of falling. I took the rung slowly as recommended, listening for movement from Leo, who was above me, before going to the next. But above a certain point, the rungs became mostly symbolic. A flick of the wrist or finger floated us to the next one up. Still, the Troan soldier at the top maintained the same steady pace. He had learned the hard way that those who climbed too fast would soon be reaching for their bags. I was thinking about that keypad. What if Fra Jad had punched in one of the 9,999 wrong numbers? What if he had attempted it several times? Eventually, a red light would have gone on in some security bunker. They'd have turned on a spielecaptor and seen a live feed of two firefighters screwing around with the keypad. They'd have sent someone to shoo them off. That person probably would not have been issued a shotgun, just the non-lethal weapons that our escorts were toting. Jessery's words came back to me. A threat. He was right. Opening that ball valve had been a way of putting a gun to the head of the whole orb. No wonder those soldiers had simply rushed up and blown us away. In a cosmos where Fra Jad knew or guessed the number on the keypad, we were sure to get killed. Freeing me, apparently, to end up somewhere else. But what would have happened in all of the vastly more numerous cosmi where he had punched in the wrong random number? We would have been taken alive. What would have happened next in those cosmi? We'd have been detained for a while, then taken to parley with Gan Odru.